Welcome to the Air Force Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
Hello, and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. With the Cold War ending, the number of aircraft in the U.S. Air Force's inventory fell dramatically as the idea of competitive arms manufacturing went by the wayside. As a result, today the Air Force finds itself with its smallest and oldest aircraft fleet in its history. Making do with what it has can only go so far, though, and the low number is starting to concern those in charge, including Congress. Therefore, the 2018 National Defense Authorization Act called for several studies on aircraft inventory requirements. One of them was a joint project between the Air Force, MITRE Corporation, as well as the Air Force Association. They presented their findings at a recent panel. Speaking first was David Gerber, who is a systems engineer for system development with the MITRE Corporation.
MITRE modeled several high-density operations in, or high-intensity operations in, the Indo-Pacific theater. We focused on this theater due to the large distances and sparse basing options in order to determine the implications for aircraft in terms of range, payload, basing, and missions. What kind of aircraft inventories can be based safely and have the capability and capacity to get to the fight? We found a high risk potential for ground losses at many of the locations that the U.S. and allies might use. In the past, the U.S. has been fortunate to conduct air operations from relatively invulnerable locations based in sanctuaries, but this is not the case today and will not be in the future. Forward-based aircraft risk being destroyed on the ground or on the deck before they can have the opportunity to launch and engage an adversary. Accordingly, we can reduce this risk and preserve our forces by expanding rear area basing options and the associated logistics required to operate from them. Now to aircraft. Bombers provide the backbone of power projection through their long range and large payloads, and they are essential to the Indo-Pacific. MITRE recommends considering no bomber retirements until substantial B-21 deliveries have occurred, and that should be around the year 2035. The U.S. needs every bomber it has, and investing to raise mission-capable rates to at least 80% would provide 30 additional flyable bombers out of a current inventory of 157. And this would also reinvigorate bomber aircrew training and readiness. Now, while bombers can operate from stateside bases, including Hawaii and Alaska, extremely long distances dilute the combat power they can deliver. Selecting and expanding additional bases in the Indo-Pacific to support bomber operations is an economical way to better leverage this valuable capability. Aerial refueling is the second key to power projection, and forward-based tankers are just as vulnerable on the ground as our primary combat aircraft. Tankers share the same requirements for additional basing options that the bombers do. Tankers in our scenarios were highly stressed assets in the situations we modeled. Now, while the U.S. is fortunate to have the KC-46 entering the inventory, for some time, the majority of the tanker inventory will be the venerable KC-135R with an average age of nearly 60 years old. Accordingly, MITRE sees KC-46 production extending indefinitely as the KC-135Rs are retired. Regarding fighter aircraft, the Indo-Pacific poses a particular challenge. The duration of combat missions in fighter aircraft is limited to about 10 hours, except in infrequent special circumstances. This is a human limit due to the pilot, unrelated to the specific type of fighter. Forward-based fighters are vulnerable, but moving them to rear bases puts them too far from the operating area to be effective, especially with the typical payloads that are a fraction of bomber payloads. Nonetheless, MITRE found that fourth-generation fighters can play a valuable role in many scenarios while freeing up fifth-generation aircraft to fly fifth-generation missions. And among the fighters, the ability to carry larger payloads was consistently valuable in our modeling. Shifting to training aircraft, the T-38C is nearly as old as our tanker fleet, and it needs to be retired more quickly than planned and replaced with the TX that is nearing production. Additionally, the T-1 will soon reach the end of its service life. The Air Force should not replace it and instead transition back to the non-specialized undergraduate pilot training with the T-6 and TX. This training system served the Air Force well for decades up to the mid-1990s. It produces a more universally assignable pilot and provides flexibility that the Air Force needs. On the subject of the TX, this airframe can also serve as an economical homeland defense fighter. if it is adapted to carry armament, onboard sensors, and air refueling capabilities. Today's fourth and fifth generation fighters were designed to operate in more threatening environments that are not the case at home. Plus, they are more expensive to operate and maintain. An armed FTX light fighter can save money while performing this important mission, making fourth and fifth generation fighters available for the away game. It also would open rich, cost-effective opportunities for companion fighter and bomber training, adversary air support, exports, and collaboration with our allies and partners. U.S. strategic airlift appears to be healthy for the next decade, but this is the only critical U.S. air power capability that is not in or near production. MITRE estimates that significant retirements of the C-17 and C-5M aircraft will begin in the mid-2030s. Therefore, by the end of the study window, i.e. 2030, we must have a plan in place, a service life extension, new aircraft development, or some other option to maintain adequate strategic airlift capacity in light of the retirements that will be coming. In closing, you may have noticed that I skipped part of the fighter discussion, namely how to solve the forward-based fighter challenge. We believe the answer may lie in conventional deterrence. MITRE concluded that new basing options for bombers and tankers can rebalance the correlation of forces in the Indo-Pacific. Combined with robust programs to exercise command and control and interoperability with our allies and partners, new concepts of operations that employ a coordinated mix of aircraft and basing show great promise to improve our conventional deterrent posture and thereby reduce the risk of conflict in this important theater.
That was David Gerber, System Engineer for System Development with the MITRE Corporation, speaking at a recent panel on the Air Force's aircraft inventory needs. Next up, we hear from the Air Force Association on its perspective. I'm Eric White.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
We now continue our airing of a recent panel discussion on Air Force aircraft inventory needs. Speaking next was Mark Gunzinger, who is director for the Mitchell William Institute for Aerospace Studies at the Air Force Association.
I'm struck that after the fact, three studies conducted independently had many of the same recommendations. We even had different methodologies. CSBA did what it does best and focused more on wargaming and workshops and really digging into potential future operating concepts that could drive a need for a different mix of capabilities and a different force structure in the future. But a lot of those concepts are very similar to what my partners at the table here have looked at and considered. The need for increased long-range strike, the ability to operate in longer ranges, increased lethality, increased survivability, moving toward a fifth and in the future sixth generation of force, which is much more survivable in contested areas. These are all things that we shared in our insights. Next slide, please. So the report that we released to the public starts off with just a bit of diagnosis before we get to the prescription. Older, smaller Air Force, and we trace that history in the report, and this slide is just a reflection of what's in there in much, much greater detail. So I invite you to take a look at that report, which also explains how we think the Air Force got in the situation it is today. We also talk about how today's force, frankly, lacks survivability in the context of a future war fight against China or Russia in contested and highly contested environments. The Air Force is investing in stealth technologies, new weaponry, and other capabilities to improve the survivability of that force. But a lot of those capabilities are yet to come, as you see in this little snapshot of today's force against the different threat environments. Here are some of the metrics that, frankly, we use throughout. The CSBA did not invent and impose on our participants. It consisted of strategists, planners, policymakers, and operators that participated in our workshops and war games and other activities. These metrics essentially came from them. How should we best align our Air Force with a new defense strategy? What kinds of operating concepts and capabilities could help the Air Force to do that? And so these are the metrics that popped out of those discussions, and I wanted to lay them out for you. Obviously, improve the lethality and survivability of the force in the future. Would a new concept or capability allow the Air Force to do things better than it can today, or maybe even do things that it can't do today? For potential new old aircraft and other capabilities, we also consider the opportunity cost. Well, if we invest in that, are we foregoing investment in a capability that we'll really need in the future? That we reduce risk in the future, not just in the near term. So we thought it'd be useful to lay that out for you today. If you asked us what the single most important recommendation that came out of our study was, I would say it would be the force planning construct, which was required by the 2018 NDAA, that we recommend a construct. Now, I think this is one difference between what the Air Force and MITRE proposed. We took an independent look at a force planning construct, and we concluded that the first, the rows in blue on top, really were the priorities for the Air Force looking to the future. Must sustain, have the capabilities, capacity to sustain, obviously strategic deterrence, defend the homeland, as well as be prepared to deter and, if necessary, defeat the campaign strategies of two great power aggressors nearly simultaneously. That's China and Russia nearly simultaneously. Why? Well, when you think about a potential conflict in Europe with Russia, say in the Baltic states or another region, primarily it'll be air, ground, cyberspace centric. And in the Pacific against China, say in the South China Sea, that would be maritime, air, cyber, space centric. I'll throw in the electromagnetic spectrum for good measure. I'm not saying, and we didn't say, and our participants didn't say, that the Army and other Marine Corps would not have a role in the Pacific. Of course they would. But when you look at the predominant forces that might be used in scenarios, which I'll show you in a second, air was always a heavy player. So we thought it would be prudent to recommend a force planning construct that looked like this. It didn't ignore conflict with a lesser aggressor such as Iran and North Korea, or engaging in long-time peacetime competition and so forth. The theory of the case here was, if you truly size and shape a force to do those three things, sustain strategic deterrence, defend the homeland, and be prepared to defeat aggression, a great power, aggression, then you want to take that force structure and then test it against the other requirements on the bottom three rows to make sure you've got the bases covered. There may be some capabilities, especially soft capabilities, where that would be additive that come out of those bottom three rows. So here are a couple of the scenarios we used in our workshops and war games. One scenario was set in the South China Sea in 2035 time frame. The reason we chose 2035 is there's going to be a lot of new capabilities that could be in the force by that time. We wanted to play them, stress them, and see how they could change operating concepts that I mentioned before. And a second conflict set in the Baltic Sea region. And here are some of the assumptions that we explained in quite some detail in our report. We wanted to lay out the foundation for our recommendations, the scenarios we used, the assumptions we adopted, all that have an impact on future capability and capacity for the Air Force. Homeland defense and strategic deterrence. We didn't ignore that. We took a look at it. In fact, the point was made by a majority of our participants in workshops and war games that we can't ignore the growing threat to the United States of cruise missile attacks and other conventional attacks. And there is probably going to be a requirement in the future for additional force structure, additive force structure that the Air Force might need to sustain to deter those kinds of threats against the United States. And I emphasize that the kinds of numbers you see below are the force structure that our participants recommended would be additive to a force structure would also deploy to engage in conflict against China and Russia in the future. So those are additive forces. They're also unclassified. They're not the the product of the U.S. government. So here's kind of the roll-up. When you add together the forces needed to engage in the scenarios I showed you, plus homeland defense and sustaining strategic deterrence, especially in the event of a conflict with a nuclear-armed great power adversary, they pop out to primary mission aircraft inventory, PMAI, and total aircraft inventory you see here. And I just circled a couple of the our recommendations to the squadrons. We use the exact same metrics the Air Force uses to determine numbers of squadrons from PMAI aircraft. So it's apples to apples there. And you can see that we made a recommendation for an increase in the fighter squadron, but most significantly an increase, again, in the long-range capabilities in the form of future bombers. So I showed you this slide already. If you were to ask what was the second most significant recommendation, it would be this. Increase survivability of force. Increase the ability to operate in contested, in the future, highly contested environments. Next slide. So the force structure I just showed you stacks up like this. And that is a very significant shift. This is not a force structure that can be developed by 2030. This is a force structure that we recommend be developed over the next 15 to 20 years. So we're calling the future force a 2035 plus force, if you will. Just some of the specifics. We did recommend accelerating B-21 and start fielding them as quickly as possible. And we believe that that would be possible in the 2020s, late 2020s, and of course in the early 2030s. We also recommended maximizing procurement of the F-35. Let's field that fifth generation force as quickly as we can. As we begin to invest in new capabilities, such as a penetrating counter-aircraft, penetrating electronic attack aircraft, which we think ought to be one and the same, a multi-mission capability, penetrating ISR systems, multi-mission unmanned aircraft that can help with base defense and other missions in Europe and the Pacific. MX stealth unmanned aircraft. It's, again, multi-mission for strike, ISR, electronic attack, and possibly other missions. We also recommended increasing the size of the tanker force in the future to support the larger force that extends naturally from a force planning construct that would require the Air Force to organize, train, and equip to be prepared to defeat aggression by China and Russia nearly simultaneously.
Mark Gunzinger is director of the Mitchell Institute for Aerospace Studies at the Air Force Association. He spoke at a recent panel on Air Force inventory needs. Coming up, we'll hear what the Air Force itself has to say about the study's findings. I'm Eric White.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
Joining a recent panel on the aircraft needs of the Air Force was Lieutenant General Tim Fay. He's Deputy Chief of Staff for Strategy, Integration, and Requirements with the Air Force.
I'm going to borrow a little bit from our Acting Secretary of the Air Force, Matt Donovan's comments that some of you may have caught that he made. And so let me paint a picture here. We talk really about the national defense strategy and how the Air Force we need is going to satisfy the national defense strategy. For three decades, our adversaries have studied how we organize, train, and equip our Air Force. They've invested heavily in technology and strategies in ways they hope reduce our advantages by exploiting what they perceive as our vulnerabilities. while also designing a force they hope can avoid our many strengths. Because of these trends and the potential to erode deterrence, we now have a national defense strategy that refocuses our department on the need to build a force that competes, deters, and wins in a strategic security environment characterized by great power competition. And that's kind of underlined this whole discussion. From an Air Force design perspective, I can assure you we have and continue to move aggressively to align with our national defense strategy. In our 20 program, we set the vector. And in our 21 program, which when we're able to talk about that a little more, we step on the accelerator. And you'll see that. We are building air and space forces that are even more lethal, resilient, adaptive, and seamlessly integrate with our joint force teammates and allies and partners. So how are we doing that? And what is our framework as we shift from old to get to the new? First, our chief's number one modernization priority for us is fielding the ability to conduct multi-domain operations by performing multi-domain command and control. Multi-domain operations executed via multi-domain command and control is about creating scale and tempo agnostic platform or trucks by sensing, connecting, fusing data and getting it to decision makers at speeds in ways that create multiple multi-domain dilemmas for our adversaries. We're going to talk a little bit about more of that during Q&A, I believe, but this is kind of the discussion you have heard about us building highways instead of focusing on building trucks. Second, we are laser focused on space. Space is a contested domain. As such, U.S. Air and Space Forces must compete, deter, and win in space. As Acting Secretary of the Air Force Donovan noted yesterday, this will require advanced offensive and defensive capabilities, innovative theories of operational concepts, and great joint doctrine. This will ensure our space professionals will maintain our dominance. Third, we're looking at new ways to generate combat power, and both of the gentlemen kind of discussed some of the concepts that we're considering and looking at and assessing. We will do this across the globe as a global air force, both with allies and partners in our forward posture and simultaneously at range with our global power capability. We will bring this 1-2 punch of U.S. air and space power together with multi-domain command and control at times, places, and volumes of our choosing. And finally, we need to do that above 3 while performing contested logistics or logistics under attack. We are working to ensure logistics support to the joint forces agile, resilient, ready, and persistent. To get those 4 lines of effort rolling and into our program and ultimately into the field, we are lashed at the hip with our A8 teammates and our AAQ teammates, along with our MAGCOMs and our staffs. And we look forward to seeing more detailed on the hows and the whats as we get through that post-budget release. As Acting Secretary Donovan said yesterday, now is the time for some bold moves for our Air Force. This will ensure our Air and Space Forces will maintain and extend our advantages so we compete to turn win in the future with the same or better advantages that we do so today.
That's Air Force Lieutenant General Tim Fay, Deputy Chief of Staff for Strategy, Integration, and Requirements. If you missed any of this episode, you can find it online. Head to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to the Air Force Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.